It is Friday, November 12th. Welcome to Menace of Sports. A day late this week because I took a day off on Tuesday for the first time and against my better judgment, but it's been great, man. A lot of content, and I got a lot to talk about. We are going to talk about some big-time games, including probably the only person in the country that's going to call this shot. I'm calling a shot later in the show, and I'm telling you right now, no one else in the country is calling this shot, so get ready for it. But before we get there, we're also going to bring our lead handicapper from Menace to Picks on, our sportsbook joker, really brilliant dude and analytical dude. So he's going to break down kind of the best bets of the weekend, give you a little gambling advice. Also, if you haven't yet, please check out our tailgate. Menace to Sports presents Charging on Lane, Braxton Miller's foundation and my grandfather's foundation, raising money for both. It's down on campus, right on the corner, like right by the stadium, right next to Varsity Club at the Point on Lane, if you want to look it up. It's going to be big time. I mean, the food is bomb. The food is ridiculous. Shade on the Canal is offering or bringing wings. Revelry Tavern, which has amazing food, is bringing sides. Probably like they do mac and cheese, cheesy potatoes, Nashville hot chicken dip, all kinds of stuff. So it's not bad. It's not like your typical tailgate food. It's bomb tailgate food. And the Giant Eagle, I don't know what they're bringing yet for this one, but they've brought sliders. They brought pulled pork. They brought all kinds of stuff, which is really good too. Food's on point. Also sponsored by Buckeye Vodka, Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. I think we're going to have tequila, rum, you name it, we're going to have it. Also Corona Beer, White Claw, you name it. It's all there. It's covered. It's heated. We have our own private bathrooms, not porta potties. Nice, clean, private bathrooms. There's four of them attached that only people at the event can use. There's big screen TVs. If you're not going to the game, come watch it with us, man. Braxton Miller, myself, and a bunch of old other former players. It's on Eventbrite. It's also all over my social media. Braxton will post about it this coming week. So come hang out with us. But before we get to the show and get to the football content, I just got to bring this up. I brought it up on the morning show, so you might have already heard this, but Dan Wolkin is back being a woke pussy is what he is. Talking about, you know, Sarkisian responded to Bo Davis ripping the team. We played the audio last episode and basically supported his coach, said our coaches are passionate. You know, what I heard was a passionate coach. And Dan Wolkin said, all I heard was a coach that was calling a bunch of players motherfuckers. Like, that was his take on it. Like, how dare he talk to those players that way? Oh my God. And Dan Wolkin is a bitch. And so of course I had to respond, and I responded, well, we would call you a motherfucker, but I don't think anyone believes that anyone's mother would ever fuck you. Hashtag man titties. So we're asking you to give us your Dan Wolkin take and hashtag man titties. A couple great ones that I've already seen. One came through today that, Dan Wolkin sits when he pees. That was one of them. And then another one was, do they not swear like that in the women's locker room at Orange Theory? And there was one more that I thought was hilarious. Oh, Dan Wolkin wears UGG boots with his Lululemon pants. I think that's great. So give me your Dan Wolkin take and tag us at Menace of Sports, and we'll blow this thing up. Hashtag man titties. And let's get after old Dan Wolkin a little bit. It's always fun to poke pussy, isn't it? literally sometimes. Anyways, enough about that. Let's get to the show.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown. Ohio.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.
All right, we are going to switch up the order a little bit from how we usually do things. We're going to get to analysis second. I want to get to some, so I'm going to bring our lead handicapper on because I just had a feeling this is going to be a big weekend for our Menace to Picks team. And so I want to mention, if you want to gamble on sports, if you're interested in gambling, one of our partners, MyBookie, you go to their website, use promo code Menace, and they deposit match, right? You put in $100, they match it with a free $100. If you haven't signed up yet, I don't know what you're waiting for. It's a way to gamble, and with our handicappers, I mean, you're going to have a tool to really attack college football this weekend, attack the NFL, and I mean, college basketball started up, NBA's heating up a little bit. I mean, there's a lot to bet on, and so if you want to fire some bets, man, we got the analysis for you. You can take my analysis of games, you can take our handicappers' advice, you take all of that plus your own opinions, go to MyBookie, you know, place. My big thing is two-team parlays, right? Two-leg parlays. Parlays are hard to hit if you put out seven teams. You put out a two-leg parlay that you feel great about both games, you can get great odds, great paybacks, and MyBookie, with the promo code, you can essentially bet it with free money. So go to MyBookie, sign up, just try it out, put in $50, $100, whatever you want to put in, and they'll match it, and then bet with free money and see how it goes. And so with that, I want to start this episode off, and I'm going to bring on right now, get him on the line, our lead handicapper for the Menace 2 Picks handicapping service and platform, sports gambling platform, the sports book joker, JG himself. Let's get to JG. All right, welcome back to the show, our lead handicapper, lead analyst for the Menace 2 Picks handicapping service that we have that has been absolutely killing it this fall, as we did last fall, so it's not that surprising. And like anything in gambling, and I'll let you talk about it a little bit, JG, but you know, it's ebbs and flows, it's ups and downs, it's a marathon, not a sprint, but overall this college football season, we are well up, I mean, hundreds of units. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but anyways, welcome to the show, JG. What's going on?
Appreciate you feeling good. Watched the NFL last night. NFL's a little crazy. College football's been fun, so we're ready for a good weekend.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, the NFL, I don't know what the fuck happened to Lamar Jackson and that offense. But, I mean, Miami's had a decent defense, but good God, that was a brutal game to watch. It was like, what, 6-3 going into the fourth quarter, and you're like, what the fuck is this? Is this football? Like, it was awful. It's just an awful game.
That's the tough thing. That's the tough thing about handicapping NFL right now. It's a little bit of a joke, to be honest, because when you got the Jaguars beating the Bills, Dolphins beating the Ravens, you got the Bengals losing to the Jets, a lot of these things happen. I mean, it's NFL, anything could happen, but there hasn't really been any evidence out there to predict these things.
No.
So people talk all the time, hey, let's take some money line dogs, just dogs are up to win. I got to see something or see some numbers that make me think that could happen. But yeah, when I'm seeing the Jacksonville Jaguars go on the road, they can't do anything against Seattle, who's not good. And then they turn around and beat a team that a lot of people have as a potential Super Bowl winner in the Bills.
No doubt. No doubt. And, you know, just how I played the weekend, and I lost on the Rams. I had an awesome, badass parlay that was contingent on the Rams winning money line, you know, minus 400 almost. But the two plays that I like from this weekend that did hit if anyone says they would take the Jaguars money line against the Bills, they're fucking on drugs. Like, no, nobody could have predicted that. Like, just stop it. But at plus 14.5 at home, I mean, now you're saying, all right, maybe they'll probably lose by 10, right? That made more sense to me than, and if anyone says they gave out the money line, they completely guessed. And I mean, just, they hit the lottery. They got lucky.
Right. So that's why all along, you know, our Sunday is a big day for everybody to bet sports, but it doesn't have to be. You know, just because there's football on doesn't mean you have to go crazy. And well, particularly if you play with a weekly bankroll, you get to that Sunday and you're like, all right, I got to make a move. I mean, I would have a game plan for that, because when you're going to, you know, throw some money out there, you've had a winning week, then all of a sudden you're seeing some of the results like we've seen. I mean, that's not worth investing your money in when it's been that unpredictable.
There's no doubt. And I know a lot of people, you know, settle up on a Tuesday after Monday Night Football. And so it's tempting, right? Because whether you've had a good week or maybe you're down a little bit, a lot of people look at that Sunday, Monday as either a chance to get back in the black to try to get to make money. Or, I mean, like you said, it's all about discipline, right? If you're up, don't blow it all on some of these unpredictable games. But I want to transition, and I want to give out some winners. Give us some winners, Joker. What do you like this weekend? I mean, obviously the two biggest games in the Midwest, which is kind of where our background is going to be Ohio State, Purdue. Everyone's going to talk about that. And Michigan, Penn State. Those are the two of the bigger games in the Midwest. Talk to me about those games specifically, and what other games you like.
What I'm seeing from Purdue is, you know, their offense got on track against Michigan State. But for me, if you've listened to anything that I've talked about on the Menace 2 Picks podcast, is Michigan State's pass defense is horrible.
Horrible.
They're one of the worst I've seen. And for Michigan State to have a dream of coming to Columbus and working their way into the Big East championship, going to Indianapolis, that's just not going to happen. They're not going to beat Ohio State next week. You know, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. But, I mean, they made Purdue look amazing. They made Michigan look amazing. These teams aren't great offenses, you know, dynamic offenses. And they're putting up 40 points, 35, 40 points on Michigan State. That doesn't mean a lot to me. If you do some digging a little bit deeper on Purdue, their offense averages in, you know, over the course of playing good teams, only in the mid-teens.
Yeah.
You know, even the game that they won against Iowa, they only scored, I think, 20 points in the game. So they've had several games where they've been 13 points, 10 points.
Yeah.
So points are going to be at a premium against this Buckeye defense that's healthier now than ever. They're going to have Steel Chambers for the full game.
Yep.
As you've mentioned, talking about if they can put a competent game plan together for shutting down David Bell.
That's it.
Which I don't know if you're going to shut him down, but you can't let him catch a slant or, you know, a post with nobody home like the Buckeyes did against Nebraska right before halftime.
Right.
The Buckeyes probably go on and cover. That's not a close game if Ohio State just makes Nebraska drive the ball down the field. Instead of giving up two long touchdown passes to a receiver that's not even that good, he's nothing compared to David Bell.
No doubt.
So,
and you know what? It's one of those things where we'll let the Mensa handle props on Saturday, but I'm sure David Bell will go over the receiving yards prop, whatever that number set at. He'll have 100 yards receiving, but because he's their one trick pony. I mean, they're going to feed him the ball as much as they possibly can. Ohio State just has to make sure he doesn't score three touchdowns or two touchdowns, right? They need to, he's going to get his, but just don't let him kill you. Let him hurt you a little bit, but don't let him kill you.
For me, I have Ohio State covering for a couple reasons. Number one, looking at the spread, you know, we had people that were, you play the guess the spread game, you would have guessed the Buckeyes are going to be a 14-point favorite or a 12-point favorite against Purdue. Vegas wasn't buying that at all. It immediately opened up as three touchdowns. A lot of people like Purdue in the game. And the number is rising. It's going to be past probably 21 by the time the game starts. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, that has nothing to do with analytics at all. That's just simply looking at a number.
Yeah, and what is Vegas telling you by that number, right? Same reason you and I talked about it, not on the show, but that Browns Bengals spread. Like, why was Cincinnati only favored by one? Like, that doesn't make sense, right? And it's because Vegas thought the Browns might win that game.
Right. So that's key. That's my key point. The second point is the fact that Penn State can struggle to score. Excuse me, that Purdue can struggle to score at times.
Yeah.
In order to cover 20 points against the Buckeyes, you're going to have to score at least 20. Because they're not going to be able to hold Ohio State down, you know, on average in these big matchups. Ohio State scoring around 36 points per game when they're not playing a Rutgers or a Maryland who they're just lighting up. But Ohio State's probably going to be around 40, 42 points in the game. That means Purdue's got to get in the end zone three times. I don't see it happening. I got the Buckeyes winning around 42-17. And covering the spread.
And I don't know if you have in front of you, but it sounds like a Purdue team total under is probably a good idea, right? And I mean, if that number, if you don't have it in front of you, if that number is over 21, a team total under is probably a decent bet, right?
Right. I don't see Purdue outside of some random picking up a fumble or running back a tipped interception or something. I just don't see their offense creating enough points.
No question. I agree. Well, I'm going to pull up that line while we talk, and I'll give it to the listeners. And we'll maybe see if that's a decent bet. But talk to me about Penn State and Michigan. What do you see going on there?
This is a tough game. I think that the fact that it's a pick'em game is pretty telling. These teams are pretty even to me. Mm-hmm. Penn State's had to go to Ohio State. They had to play Auburn. They've probably played a tougher schedule overall than Michigan. They had to go to Iowa and do some things that Michigan hasn't had to do. So Michigan, and I think that this kind of has ring true with Harbaugh in general, and my brother likes to make this point a lot. When Michigan can out-talent the other team, they usually can embarrass them. But when they're even or they don't have as much talent as their opponent, they struggle in those games. They generally do not beat teams that have more talent than they are. for me, when I look at these rosters, they're pretty even. I like the fact that Michigan's got two legit defensive ends, yep. game wreckers.
Yep.
Other than that, I'm not crazy about their defense really at all on their back end. I think their safety that everybody loves for me is way overrated. You know, their linebacker play is not what it was 5 years ago. So I think this is going to be a great game. Michigan in general does not cover well against the Big Ten. Recently, they've really only covered like three of the last 11 first Big Ten opponents.
Wow.
And then also against teams with a winning record, they're 0 for their last 7 covering the spread. Wow. So with that being said, I'm going to take Penn State. I kind of was leaning on the under until I saw some numbers that in this matchup, particularly when it's in Happy Valley, it's gone over for whatever reason. So I'm just going to lean Penn State.
Penn State money line.
Penn State money line to win the game.
Ah, nice. I would not. I'll get to my analysis later in the show, but that's. Yeah, I mean, they're evenly matched, I can tell you that much. And that's interesting. Well, as would be the case, right, the team total over-under for Purdue is 20.5, and over-under for Ohio State is 42 points. So I think you're pretty on your analysis of that game.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't see how Purdue is going to be able to put up the points it's going to take to cover.
No, I don't either. Tell me what other games do you like nationally? I mean, I got a bunch of games I'm going to talk about on this show. I don't know if you like them as far from a gambling aspect. I'm going to talk about Oklahoma, Baylor, Georgia, Tennessee, A&M, Ole Miss. But what other games out there that are you looking at that you say, you know what, I like this bet?
Cincinnati tonight. Mm. Cincinnati has not covered the last three. They haven't even been close
right.
to covering the last three. They've been playing teams that, you know, can play a little bit. You know, you play Tulsa, they can be tricky. Play Navy, it's a tricky game. Tulane has caused some problems for some people. So those are the last three, and you're like, come on, man, those teams are trash. They're really not. Those are solid enough football programs that they can be coached and have veteran players.
And you saw one of them in Tulsa give Ohio State some problems. You know what I mean? Like that Tulsa team's not a bad team. Now should Cincinnati beat them? Yes, but cover a big spread? Probably not.
One thing I've noticed with college sports, particularly now I'm watching college basketball, a lot of these guys that are transfers that are playing now, and these guys with extra years, some of these guys are in their fifth year of playing college football or college basketball.
Yeah, yep.
So you take a mid-major team that has a good coaching staff and a veteran team, they're going to be able to hang in. They're not going to be afraid to play against Cincinnati.
That's so true. And I talked about that preseason. I didn't really think about it until you just brought it back up. But yeah, that's COVID benefited these mid majors more than anyone because all those kids came back because they were granted an extra year. And now you got a veteran laden team and you're going to go against Ohio. The COVID didn't affect Ohio State at all. All those kids still went to the NFL. They didn't give a shit. They weren't coming back for another year. Right. So you have a veteran laden team against Cincinnati who maybe, you know, they had some people leave and not necessarily Cincinnati, but some of these bigger programs where the kids didn't opt to play another year.
Right. So I want to talk about Cincinnati's opponent tonight. They have been inconsistent, to put it lightly. When they cover, they've turned around and not covered, if this makes sense. They're 1-10 after they cover. All right. So if they cover the spread, the next week they don't. They're 1-10.
See, so, that's why we have you, JG. That's a great stat.
So when I look at them, they're just not reliable. And Cincinnati, they have played well, and they get these Friday night games in their conference, these Friday night games. And whenever they get these Friday night games, now people are like, okay, this could be a dumb stat that Cincinnati's 6-0 in their last six on a Friday. That's a dumb stat. What does a day of the week have to do with it? Well, it's their big game that they get in their conference. A lot of times that the TV, the ESPN or wherever the game is being broadcast, that's a big Friday night game. So Cincinnati's used to playing in these primetime spots on a Friday, and they've been waxing people. Six straight times they've showed up on a Friday and ran people off the field. They did it against Temple a few weeks ago. I think that was their last cover. So I got Cincinnati going down to Florida and just waxing them tonight.
Poor Jeff Scott. So what is the spread? 23?
It's 23. Another thing that you would think, so say you're a Buckeyes fan, you're like, hey, man, I'm not sure they're going to cover that. I'm not against teasing Cincinnati down to like 17 and then teasing the Buckeyes tomorrow down to like 14, 15.
Yeah.
So because I don't think there's any chance that Cincinnati doesn't win by at least, you know, three touchdowns. So they could set yourself up tonight. You're cheering for the Bearcats to cover 17 points or so, and then you got yourself some 3 points in the Buckeyes game tomorrow.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So tease Cincinnati and Ohio State to cover. That's a really good bet. So lock that shit in, listeners. You hear it? What else you got? You got any other big plays that you like?
I think an interesting game in the Big Ten is Minnesota going on the road to play Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
Some of these Big Ten West games are now like elimination games. I mean,
they
four teams that are 4-2.
Wow.
Three or four teams. I know Wisconsin is, Iowa, Minnesota, possibly Purdue.
Yep.
So some of these games are like elimination games for them. But the boat rowers are they're going to Iowa, and they're a 5-point dog. And I'm looking at that game, and initially I look at that number, and I'm thinking, like, all right, this is going to be a competitive game. Iowa's been struggling a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But then I look back, and for whatever reason, Iowa, when they have a chance to play against the boat rowers, they handle business.
Yeah,
I think they're 5, and they've covered 5 in a row against Minnesota. So for whatever reason, the coaching matchup here in these last 5 years, these teams have played in the Big Ten West, Iowa handles business against them.
Wow.
So I'm going to take Iowa to cover the 5 points here. I'm also going to take them probably in a money line parlay somewhere. But this is a massive game for Iowa. I'm hearing they might be doing some different things with the QB position, but this is not a game that Iowa can lose at home. I think Minnesota's decent, but Iowa's mostly a healthy team. They had some corner issues with some of their corners being dinged up, but just a big home game in November in Iowa that I got the Hawkeyes circling the wagons here.
Well, and you know what? I mean, they've had a fall from graces, right? They were number 2 in the country for a blip in the radar, and they
which was hilarious.
Yeah, it was, and you know they
see them ahead of the Alabama Crimson Tide.
That's just hilarious. But they have fallen from graces, and this is a monumental game to get back into the conversation, at least to try to win a championship, right? They're not going to go to the playoffs. That dream is dead, but one dream is still alive, right? And from a team that had high aspirations, they got one thing left to play for, and that's to win the West and go take on the Buckeyes, probably in Indianapolis.
They were our preseason pick to win the Big Ten West, and what they would need to do is they would need to win out, win their last three, and then Wisconsin would need to lose one of their last three. And Wisconsin's games are Northwestern this week, then they have Nebraska at home, which means they'll probably beat Nebraska by a touchdown. That's what Nebraska does. and then they have to go to Minnesota, and they'll probably be a 3-6 point favorite at Minnesota. So it could happen for Iowa, but, they have to win this week or they're pretty much done of that dream of getting to Columbus.
For sure. For sure. Well, I'm
getting to Indianapolis to play Buckeyes.
Right. Well, as always, Joker, we appreciate your insight. Appreciate you coming on. Those of you listening, go make sure you go follow our analytic handicapping team at Menace to Picks on Twitter and Instagram. Also download Telegram and link up with them. And if you want a full show of handicapping and sports gambling analysis, go right now, subscribe to the Menace to Picks podcast, where we're the Joker Midwest Insider. I mean, we have all kinds of handicappers come on. And I mean, they don't just handicap football. I mean, there's horse racing, there's all kinds of stuff. So it's a very entertaining show, very educational show. If you're into sports gambling, go check them out. And as always, I mention every show, our handicapping service is on Patreon, patreon.com/menace2picks. For as little as $15 a month, if you just want the highest
highest confidence picks,
yeah, infinity locks and such. So appreciate you, JG. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, when you look at us, we gave you some picks up 30 seconds here, Coach. We gave you some picks. When you look at us, I use this metaphor of, say you're looking at Mookie Betts and you watch 5 at-bats that Mookie Betts has. He strikes out one of the at-bats and you're like, ah, Mookie sucks. But then you go back the next day and you realize that Mookie went 3-for-5 with 2 home runs and a double.
Yeah, right.
So we gave out 5 picks. You know, say you fire one, it doesn't hit. Take a step back. Look at the whole big picture. Look at the whole big picture of the weekend, of the season, of that day, whatever you want to do. But the sample size is key.
Oh, yeah.
I can't guarantee you we're going to go 5-for-5 with what we just gave.
No, but
when you step back and look at it, you know, what did Mookie Betts do? He had you know, six RBIs and three hits, two of them home runs. So think about it like that. I can't guarantee you which one is going to, you know, be the huge play. But generally, our track record shows that we get shit done when we need to.
Well, in the long run, it wins. That's all that really matters. Like, if you stick with it and you have a half a brain and you step back and look at the big picture, in the end, it wins, right? And there certainly are days where it goes 5 for 5. And then there's certain days where it might go 0 for 5. Like, it's gambling. But in the long run, it wins.
For sure. Absolutely so. Best of luck, everybody out there.
Appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir.
All right, see you. All right, 25 minutes in, it's time to get to my analysis of some of these games, and some of it's going to be different than the Joker's, but that's fine. He's a handicapper. I'm a football coach, so that's going to happen. So we're going to talk about, you know, 4 or 5 games. I can't remember the exact number. We're going to start off with a battle in the Big Ten East, right? Penn State is going to need some help if they want to get to Indianapolis. And Michigan, honestly, this is a do-or-die game. If they don't win this game at Penn State, they are pretty much out after losing to Michigan State with 2 losses. I can't imagine that they would even have a chance to get back in it. So here's my analysis of the game, right? I studied both teams. I haven't studied Michigan this in depth yet this year, so I was excited to do it, right? I want to see, like, how real is Jim Harbaugh's team, right? Are they real? And when you compare the defenses, both of these defenses are eerily similar and very good, to be honest with you. Both solid defenses, right? They both give up around 3.6 yards per carry in the run game, so a little under 4 yards per rush. They both give up around 5.7, 5.8 yards per pass in the throw game, right? Both allow in the mid to high 50% completion percentages. Both have a +6 turnover margin, right? Michigan has 3 more sacks on the year, so not a negligible difference, right? Both have mid to low 30% third down conversions against them. So very, very similar in most analytics, right? Honestly, the biggest difference, and this is a game-deciding aspect to watch for each defense, is Penn State has the top red zone defense in the Big Ten, third best in the country. Michigan is 10th. They allow touchdowns over half of their trips to the red zone. Michigan does. 50% of the time a team gets in the red zone, they score a touchdown. Penn State, 29%. So that's a big, big difference. Penn State has a much better defense when you get down in the red area. And then there's tackling. Michigan is a better coach defense when you watch the film. And when it comes to fundamentals, Michigan gets the edge, right? Under 7 missed tackles a game, Penn State is over 10. This is the equalizer for Michigan. You guys know how I feel about missed tackles. If Michigan can have single-digit missed tackles and Penn State is double-digit, Michigan's going to win this game. So outside of the red zone, you're really looking at eerily similar strong defenses, with Michigan having a slight edge because of tackling. That's the way I look at it, right? The whole key to this game is, can Penn State find a way to score some points? That's it, right? And is Michigan's offense for real? This is the biggest test Harbaugh has had to date defensively this year, and I'm excited to watch it. I mean, is Michigan's offense for real? Harbaugh's offense is going to get tested. This is by far the best defense they've played. The key players to watch when Michigan's on defense are their two defensive ends, Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo. 71 quarterback pressures combined, 45 and 26 respectively. And here's why. Not only are they two really, really, really good defensive ends, Aiden Hutchinson might be the best defensive end in the Big Ten, probably is. Here's why. Because Sean Clifford, Penn State's quarterback, is a solid quarterback when he's kept clean. Under pressure, he is abysmal. Bad. So if Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo can get pressure on Sean Clifford, if Michigan can simulate pressures, create pressures to keep him under pressure, he's worse than bad, right? He has a 78% adjusted completion percentage when kept clean and has thrown 11 touchdowns to 1 interception, right? He's really good when life is pretty. But under pressure, his completion percentage and success rate drops 21%, and he throws it to the other team far more often. Right? 5 touchdowns and 5 to 5 interceptions, a 1-to-1 ratio when he's under pressure, 11-to-1 ratio when he's kept clean. So they need to pressure Sean Clifford. This is the key to the game. If they can pressure Sean Clifford, Michigan will win. He's also a below average deep ball thrower, 24%, 44 attempts. He only has 6 touchdowns on deep balls, launching it 44 times down the field, 50% over pressure. But again, the key here is pressure. 50% over 10 yards. But the key here is pressure. If they pressure him, he will have a bad day, right? When you look at Michigan's offense, and Cade McNamara has a similar scouting report as Sean Clifford, but with one huge difference. He does drop 20% in production when he's under pressure. So similar drop in production, but he protects the ball. He doesn't. It doesn't create turnovers. Pressure does not create equal turnovers with this Michigan offense and Cade McNamara. He has protected the ball when he's under duress. He has not thrown an interception yet due to pressure. When a team pressures him, he is not careless with the ball like Sean Clifford. He's yet to throw one. He's slightly more productive than Clifford on deep balls, 31%, but it's still below average. He's less productive on legit throws over 10 yards, only 42% completion percentage. 66% of his throws have come under 10 yards. So Cade McNamara, Sean Clifford, I'm not high on Cade McNamara, but he does his job. He doesn't turn the ball over, especially under pressure. That's when quarterbacks can get rattled and flip it to the other team, right? Like Penn State, Iowa. You just can't do that, right? The biggest difference between these two teams, Michigan has a run game. Penn State does not, and it's bad. I mean, Cade McNamara has attempted 219 passes this year. Sean Clifford, 351. So almost a third more than McNamara. Or really, 50% more than McNamara. More than. Michigan has the number one rushing offense in the Big Ten at 234 yards a game. Penn State is 13th, almost last. The best rushing attack and the almost last rushing attack. Michigan averages 5.3 yards a carry. Penn State, 3.2. So that's the biggest difference of the game right there. Michigan can run the ball. Penn State cannot. So the question is, can Penn State's rush defense attack the Wolverines like Wisconsin and Washington did? Because as well as Michigan has run the ball this year, against those two defenses, they average 1.3 and 1.6 yards per carry respectively. Penn State has a really solid rush defense. So I don't think Michigan's going to be able to run the ball. But the reality is Penn State might not gain a yard in the run game. So I'm actually going against our handicappers. I think Michigan wins this game, and for this reason. I think they get after the quarterback, and Sean Clifford is awful when the cooker is hot. I think Michigan can run the ball, and Penn State cannot. Michigan is the better tackling team. Michigan has the better quarterback. I think Michigan is the play. The Wolverines escape Happy Valley with the win. I think that's the move. I really do. I mean, those things, if you're the better tackling team, right, you have a better run game, right, you have the better quarterback, you win. Almost always, as long as they don't turn over the ball, right, unless something crazy happens. But that's what I think will happen. I think Michigan escapes this with a win, and Penn State, man, they are in a world of problems, right, especially because your guy, James Franklin is not getting the USC job unless like seven people turn it down. But anyway, let's move on. Another quick note, Oklahoma plays Baylor. Probably the biggest test for Caleb Williams, though it's not really a big test. I have Oklahoma winning. I'll spoil it. I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, like I say, in some of these games, you can always learn something, right? A two-loss Baylor team is a little inflated. Their only ranked win is versus BYU. They lost to TCU last week, Oklahoma State in week five. They have the 81st pass defense. So again, Caleb Williams gets to go up against a typical Big 12 awful secondary. But what they do they have great third down game plans. I mean, they're the second best third down defense in the Big 12. So he'll be tested on third down, and that's what I'm excited to watch. How does Caleb Williams do on third down against a pretty solid third down defense? They're middle of the road in the Big 12 defense in about every categorical analytic. But defensive success has come from creating interceptions. They have 9 interceptions, the most in the Big 12. So the question is Caleb Williams going to throw a few pickies? Is he going to throw a few interceptions? So I look for, that's all I'm looking for at this game. Is Caleb Williams for real? I'm only looking at third down conversions and interceptions. If he throws a couple interceptions and they don't do well on third down, I'm calling this fraudulent. Just that. And here's a fun fact for you. It's about coaching. Oklahoma is one of only 3 teams in the country with 1 or less fumbles this year. I think that's very important. It speaks to Lincoln Riley and what he's doing there. So I think Oklahoma wins, but I'm looking at third down and interceptions. Let's see if Caleb Williams is for real. We're all trying to figure it out, right? On to the Ohio State game. Purdue travels to the Horseshoe, and I'm going to tell you, get ready. Buckle up. I mean, I hope the air is thin. I hope it's not windy for the old Boilermakers, because this will be a throw fest. They average 44 attempts per game, the most in the Big Ten. They flat cannot run the ball. I mean, it's honestly shameful how bad they are at running the football. So Ohio State has one job. They have one single thing that they need to accomplish, and that's stop David Bell. And let me tell you about David Bell. You know you want the greatest analysis in the country. Here's the David Bell analysis. He's mostly an outside receiver, 464 snaps outside, 83 snaps in the slot, so they will put him in there. And so, in my opinion, I mean, Jeff Brohm is a really smart offensive coach. I think they put him in the slot more than he has all year. And will will that change, right? Will that change to try to get a matchup on Lathan Ransom and stay away from Cameron Brown and Denzel Burke, who have been outstanding? And the other question is, will Kerry Combs and Matt Barrs shadow him with their best cover corners? Or will they just take the head in the sand Alabama approach and run our defense? And next thing you know, Taraja Mitchell's covering David Bell. Like, are we really going to do that? And I do have a question for you, because I've studied the shit out of Ohio State, but I must have missed something here. What the hell happened to Cam Martinez? Someone tweet me, message me. What did I miss something? Like, why is Lathan Ransom taking his spot at slot corner? I mean, Cam Martinez was playing exceptional the first four games, and now he gets like 7-3 snaps a game. Lathan Ransom has a 57% coverage grade. Opponents are 21 for 29 throwing the ball, targeting him. 72% completion percentage, 315 yards, 2 touchdowns. Like, the experiment of Lathan Ransom as a slot corner is over. He's getting played out of position. He's not good at it. We watched him last year. He's a dynamic player. Let him do what he does best, not playing man coverage in the slot. That's not what he does. I mean, he's getting scorched out here. And if we get David Bell and Lathan Ransom, watch out. Watch out. And I already mentioned it earlier in the show, but David Bell's going to have catches. That's all they do is throw, and he's their best player. But we can't let him score. That's it, right? David Bell's impressive. I will say he has 0 drops on throws over 10 yards. He only has 1 drop on the year, but 0 over 10 yards, which is phenomenal. If you watch zone 6, we have, you know, guys with 6, 7, 8 drops. So only 1 drop on the year with as much as they throw it. That is impressive. And how about this? When the ball is catchable on a deep ball, he has a 100% catch rate, 38.2 yard average per catchable deep ball. So if Aiden O'Connell can make it catchable, David Bell is 100% averaging 38 yards a pop. They've launched it to him 20 total throws downfield, and he's only had 6 contested catches, meaning 70% of the time he is open and the catch is uncontested. That means he gets open, right? Now, I'll tell you this. I don't know if Ohio State knows this. I don't even know if Purdue knows this, but he is a right-hand dominant receiver and left-eye dominant, meaning when he's on the right side of the field, his dominant hand stops the ball, his left eye sees the ball, and I think they know that because he mostly plays on the right side of the field, and all of his, I mean, not all, 62 targets in the middle of the field or on the right side, which is where he's best, right? He only has 9 targets on the left side of the field, 62 middle and right. 76% of his receptions are middle of the field or outside to the right. Only 24% are to the left. I did math wrong there. I wrote 44, idiot. So he had 3 of his 5 touchdowns on downfield throws, right? So he has 5 touchdowns on the year. 3 of them are deep balls, and all 3 are in the middle of the field. He is also 1 of only 2 100% graded deep ball wide receivers in the Big Ten. So when it's a deep ball, there are 2 receivers in the Big Ten that have a perfect score, perfect grade, and that is David Bell and Jackson Smith and Jigba. As good as David Bell has been, when it comes to how productive a receiver is versus man coverage, he's not even in the top 15 in the Big Ten. He's 16th in the Big Ten in production versus man coverage. 53% completion percentage when he faces man coverage. Compare that to Ohio State's trio. Garrett Wilson, 91%. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 79%. Chris Olave, 69%. David Bell is 53%. So that's the key. Stop David Bell. I'm not going to go further into this game. I'm not going to look at Purdue's defense. I think Ohio State will have no problem scoring points. I agree with our handicappers. I think they win this game by 21 points as long as they can stop David Bell. I don't have faith in the defensive coaches, Kerry Combs, and I do have a little faith in Matt Barnes, but they got to have a plan to stop David Bell. If they do that, Purdue can't run the ball. If you can keep David Bell from scoring, this is going to be a blowout. If you don't, watch out now. Also, Jeff Brohm is the biggest trick play coach in America. He's got a playbook. He's got a separate playbook of trick plays, so be ready. You're going to see 3, 4, 5 trick plays in this game. Some of them might be small tricks. Some of them might be big tricks. So just get ready for that. I mean, it's going to happen. Then let's talk about Aiden O'Connell, right? The quarterback that's going to throw it to David Bell. In Purdue's 3 losses, he threw 2 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. This is the key. He still completed his passes, but they kept him out of the end zone and forced him to turn it over. And with Ohio State's pass rush, I mean, they're 4th in the country in sacks, almost 4 per game, 33 sacks on the year. They got to get after him. They can't let him just be comfortable, throw the ball, and get hot, right? That's what happened last week to Michigan State. They let him be comfortable and get hot. Ohio State cannot do that. They have to get after his ass and disrupt the football. They have to create turnovers, right? So that's my analysis on the Purdue Ohio State game. And now let's venture down to the Southeastern Conference, the Southeast country, where it just means more. Really, two good games. A&M, Ole Miss. I'm not going to break that game down, but I'll tell you what. ESPN is trying to pump A&M up to make Bama look better. Just that's what's happening. And so if you watch that game or when you watch that game, watch out now. Watch for Ole Miss to get some of the worst calls in the country this weekend. I mean, they'll get horrible calls in A&M's favor because there's too much money riding on A&M to be highly ranked to make Bama look better. I really believe it. And so watch. Just keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on the officiating and how bad Lane Kiffin gets screwed over. The other game I want to talk about, the biggest game in the South this weekend, in my opinion, Georgia on the road in Neyland Stadium. Cue the Vol Army. The boats are coming up the river. Tailgate and is popping in Knoxville. And I hate to break it to you, heat check. The black unis that Tennessee is wearing are absolute fire. Vols by 10 right now. Book it. Fire. Black jerseys. And with the daylight savings time, by the end of this game, it'll be dark for sure. And you will have an electric atmosphere in Neyland Stadium. 110,000 people absolutely rocking. So here's my analysis of this game. And here's my opinion of Georgia. Everyone knows I'm high on Georgia. Everyone knows I love their defense. Everyone knows I'm not high on their offense. But I think Georgia has shown that they are by far, no questions asked, the best team in the country, right? But here's another thing that is by far true. This Tennessee offense is the best offense Georgia has played all year. So let's look at who has Georgia beaten thus far. An awful Clemson team, UAB, an awful South Carolina team, Vanderbilt, right? So that's four horrendous teams. They blanked a decent Arkansas team, right? Which is might be their best win, honestly. An on-the-road win over Auburn. Everyone knows my feeling on Auburn. Auburn with Bo Nix is not a competent offense. They beat Kentucky, decent team. They beat Florida, awful. They beat Missouri, awful. So who have they beaten? A decent Kentucky team, an Auburn team with a fraud at quarterback, and a run-heavy Arkansas team that's probably their best win, right? That's what we got. The Achilles heel for this Georgia team is that their offense is subpar, and they're winning games because this defense is dominant. But have they really been tested? And are they really that dominant? Or are they just really, really good and play dog shit offenses, right? Georgia doesn't disrupt the ball like you would think. They're 51st in the country with 13 turnovers gained. They also turn it over more than you'd like. 44th in the country with 11 turnovers, right? This Tennessee team has a chance to sneak a shot into Kirby Smart's jaw. Because Tennessee, they lead the country. They've only thrown two interceptions. Hendon Hooker, I fucking love him. I love him. 21 touchdowns and two interceptions. And you talk about a player and an offense with momentum. They have the third best passing attack in the SEC in yards per attempt. The best passing attack in the SEC in ratio, 11 touchdowns per interception. They average 5 yards per carry. They're second in the SEC with 21 rushing touchdowns. They're second in the SEC with 51 total touchdowns behind only Alabama. Right? This offense is by far, not even close, the best offense that this vaunted Georgia defense has faced. Now, the Georgia defense, it doesn't matter who you play. This shit's impressive, right? Number one, I probably could save 5 minutes. Number one in everything. Number one in the country, they've only allowed two rushing touchdowns on the year. Number one in passing yards per attempt at 5.0. Number one in the country, only allowed 3 passing touchdowns. Number one in the country, averaging 6.6 points per game. They've only allowed 6 touchdowns total this year. That obviously leads the country. The second best is Penn State, who's allowed 14. So Penn State has allowed more than double Georgia, and Georgia leads the country, 6 touchdowns. Number two in the country, allowing 2.6 yards per carry. But there's certain analytics that I look at that predict games, right? In matchups like this, one of them's third down. 14th in the country. So not just overly dominant, really good, not overly dominant, 32% conversions. 57th in the country when a team goes for it on fourth down. 50% of the time the team gets it. So watch Tennessee to go for some fourth downs against this Georgia team. Now, what they are is they're the number one red zone defense in college football. only 25% of the time, one out of four times when a team gets in the red zone, they score a touchdown. And only a little over half the time do they even get points at all. Like, you're already inside the 25, right? If you're on the 24-yard line, that is a 41-yard field goal, right? That's makeable for almost any college football kicker. You flip it over to the other side of the ball, Tennessee's not bad on defense. They only allow 3.7 yards per carry. That's sixth in the SEC. They've given up 18 rushing touchdowns, which is 12th in the SEC, but overall, they're not bad at stopping the run, right? I always look at how teams attack a defense, right? Because what I see on film might not be what they see, but you can tell by what they do in games, right? What is their game plan? With this Tennessee defense, it's very, very clear. Teams resort to throwing the football to attack them. 349 passes attempted against this Tennessee defense, the most in the SEC. And teams only gain 6.8 yards per attempt. That's fourth in the SEC. So it's not that Tennessee's awful at defending the pass game. It's just the teams throw the shit out of it on them. Honestly, their biggest struggle on defense, the one reason why they've lost games, is they can't get off the field. Money downs. They're last in the SEC getting off the field on third down, almost 50%. But here's the caveat. Here's what people won't tell you. In the past 2 weeks, when Tennessee's looked really good against Alabama and Kentucky, I mean, that's two formidable opponents now. On third down, those two teams combined, 5 for 21, 23.8%. So just because a team sucked at the beginning of the year doesn't mean they suck today. This team has a lot of momentum, and both of those offenses are better than Georgia's. How about red zone defense? 12th in the SEC, 80% touchdowns in the red zone, 127th in the country. The only two defenses worse at stopping people from scoring in the red zone are LSU and Kansas. This is the dagger through the heart of the Volunteer Nation, right? And it's just, this is their Achilles heel that you just have to blow on it and they die. 80% of the time teams score. The last 16 trips that an opponent has went into the red zone, spanning back through Kentucky, Bama, and Ole Miss, all but one have resulted in touchdowns. Matter of fact, the only team they prevented from scoring in the red zone was South Carolina twice. Florida was 5 for 5, 4 touchdowns. Missouri, 2 for 2, 2 touchdowns. South Carolina, like I said, 2 for 4, 2 touchdowns. Ole Miss, 4 for 4, 3 touchdowns. Alabama, how about this? 7 for 7 with 7 touchdowns. Kentucky, 5 for 5 with 5 touchdowns. That means the last 12 red zone trips were touchdowns. Now, here's the caveat. I just probably destroyed Volunteer fans' entire worlds. Here's the caveat. Georgia's red zone offense is very similar to South Carolina when you watch the film. And production-wise, it is. 57% touchdowns in the red zone. 11th in the SEC, 84th in the country. So can this be the point of contention? If Tennessee could hold South Carolina to 50% touchdowns in the red zone, can they do the same or better to Georgia? Because Georgia's not good at scoring touchdowns in the red zone. I'm excited to watch this game. And I know I'm crazy. I know you're all going to say, the fuck out of here. This guy's nuts. I think Tennessee rattles the cages of college football and pulls off an upset at 3:30 in Neyland Stadium. Down goes Georgia. You heard it here first. If it happens, we will rain fire on social media about how we called this shot. I think Tennessee beats Georgia. I do. Hendon Hooker has a breakout performance and the world doesn't make sense anymore. So, bold take, I know, but I got a couple of those and I've had a couple and guess what? I've been right on a lot of them. So, I'll take this L if it is an L, but I'm calling my shot. Tennessee over Georgia, baby. Mark it down. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you were entertained. And I hope Tennessee beats Georgia. If you did enjoy it or if you disagree, you think Georgia rolls, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.